The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill. I'm delighted again to be able to speak to Oliver Brown of RC Brown, one of the UK's finest fund managers. So welcome, Oliver.
Hi, Paul. Nice to be here again.
Yeah, well, we've had a really strong rally on the market so far this year, with a FTSE over 8,000 this morning for the first time ever, largely on the back of sort of like improving economic jobs and consumer data. So putting all that together, what's your sort of like your broad brush view for equities going forward? Is this a sort of dead cat bounce, or is it a bit more sustainable?
Yeah, so we're broadly positive on equities. You know, there is some global growth out there, and the UK may have a short, shallow recession. It may actually be able to avoid that as well. You know, and given what happened in 2022, when pretty much everything fell, then, you know, we are seeing plenty of opportunity for recovery from those falls in 2022, when, you know, everything, as I said, kind of went wrong. There was wars in Europe, there was energy crises, there was, you know, inflation taking off, interest rate rises. And, you know, the outlook is more benign now than that. You know, I don't think there's going to be such major events this year as well. And, you know, ultimately, you know, the UK market is cheap. It's been cheap for a number of years. And if you buy reasonable quality at cheap prices, then over the course of time, you know, you're likely to do pretty well from that.
Yeah. And in that sort of like environment of improving, are you going more sort of like the sort of the cyclical industries, or are you sort of staying into the sort of the more sort of like, you know, sort of like durable, sort of like secular businesses, or a bit of both?
Bit of both. Yeah, I don't like to take sort of a big view. I think there is a place for absolutely having some recovery stocks in there. And, you know, we'll maybe talk later about the banking sector as well. But a bit of both. There has been a bit of a trash rally, some people are calling it. You know, some of the very beaten up stocks that are a bit more highly leveraged have rallied pretty sharply. And maybe that's going to start to come to an end, and we'll get back to perhaps looking at sort of more quality areas of the market.
Yeah. Well, one stock that's small cap that's actually fallen quite hard that you've recently bought is Strix, which does sort of like a patented kettle sort of like water filtration and I think heating control sort of like technology. And it was a darling of the stock market about 2 or 3 years ago, but it's sort of like has had a couple of problems. How are you viewing that? Is that sort of like a turnaround opportunity?
Yes, I mean it's a global leader in sort of the kettle safety control market, and it's got more than a 50% market share in that market. And you know, it has made a couple of acquisitions in recent years. There was the water filtration business in Italy called Leica, and then late last year, it actually bought a company called Billy, which is an Australian business. It's kind of for like your posh kitchens where you got your instant boiling water,
right, okay,
sparkling, or your instant very cold water. And the company that sold this, called WaterLogic, was having to sell it on competition grounds. And so Strix were able to actually buy a business that for £38 million that is forecast to do £10 million of EBIT this year. So we think that's a really, you know, attractive multiple to be buying a business on. The company obviously has got a bit of debt, which it's going to reduce, and it has, as you said, it has suffered with sort of the lockdowns in China. But obviously, those lockdowns are now you know, coming to an end, and so that should act as a tailwind for them. And you know, ultimately, it's a stock that's been beaten up. It's now modestly valued. It's paying a decent dividend as well. So we do think there is more recovery.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking at, I can't believe it. It's on a sort of PE of about 8x. Its net debt to EBITDA is roughly around about 2 or slightly less than 2. And it's presumably got some good pricing power if it controls 50% of the market, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It is an economically geared, you know, company.
Yeah.
There does need to be some economic growth, but there is. And people, as they get, you know, it's an emerging market play as well. As people get a bit wealthier, they start buying, you know, things like kettles and wanting to have a more sort of Western kind of lifestyle.
Yeah. Well, I'll certainly have a look at that, even though I probably don't need another kettle. I think I've got quite a few of those from COVID lockdown. Another one you've been buying is Surface Transforms, which I think is a sort of like a high-end carbon fiber sort of like brake disc manufacturer for the auto. Do you want to take us through this one? Because it's another one which is sort of like, you know, got some good USPs, I guess.
Yeah, so this company has got a carbon ceramic disc maker, and it's got some contracts with sort of major OEMs, you know, the likes of Mercedes, the likes of Tesla, and its products are in particularly strong demand. You know, with the growth in electric vehicles that are obviously much heavier than petrol and diesel vehicles, anything that can save weight is particularly valuable. This company is forecast to grow quickly. You know, the demand for its product is there. They are good quality products as well. And, you know, the sales are forecast to grow from around sort of 23 million or so this year to sort of north of 30 million next year. There have been some risks. There are some risks to timings with OEMs, yeah, because there's always potential for delays in their products, you know, which has, you know, nothing to do with Surface Transforms. But they've got good products and there's good demand for them. And now they've just really got to execute.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I mean, another one, just turning sort of like to all things sort of like healthcare and animal care, sort of like a bigger picture, sort of like a large cap stock, GSK. Now, this one's obviously been around for ages, and I think it's still around about the same share price as it was about 20 years ago, sort of 14, 15 pounds. But it seems to be sort of like trying to manage a sort of like a shareholder turnaround here under the CEO. Do you want to take us through this one? What sort of attracted to you? I mean, obviously, it's a good dividend player.
Yeah, so we've held this stock for many years. It is, as you say, it's cheap, it's unloved. Obviously, it's spun off its Haleon consumer products business last year as well to focus more on the healthcare side of things. It's grown sales, you know, around the 6-8% level, profits sort of low double digits. It's cheap,
you know. Less than 11 times PE.
Less than 11 times, got a yield of around 4%. We hold AstraZeneca as well, but its rating relative to that is considerably low and does look attractive. And you know, there have been activist investors who've been involved in the company and may continue to look to unlock some value. So it is one for the patient investor, but at least I suppose it's paying you in the meantime.
I guess it provides a lot of sort of financial ballast for the portfolio, doesn't it? It's sort of like if you're at the bigger end, I mean, this one is sort of like durable, long-term, and gives you plenty of income while you wait.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, just on that, on the smaller side, animal care, this one's, again, come off a lot. I guess it was probably a bit of a beneficiary of all things COVID as people got sort of like, you know, pets and companion animals and this sort of stuff. And I looked at it and the shares miraculously are about only £2, which is, for a really sort of, it seems to do sort of like drugs and pharmaceuticals for animals, largely for pets, but also for horses and for other sort of like farming animals, I think, and stuff. Can you take us through this one? Because it does seem to have a lot of USPs at a good valuation of just less than 15 times PE, historically anyway.
Yeah, so we hold this one in our AMIHT portfolios. And as you say, it's a pretty stable business. People spend on their pets. Mm. The shares, as you say, did underperform quite significantly last year as a sort of bumper effects of COVID wore off, i.e. people being at home and, you know, basically there was a big pet boom. And as you say, the shares are on sort of a PE of 13, 14 times. There's no real debt in the business. It's a stable type business. And we do think of the shares at these levels look a little on the cheap side.
Yeah. Well, compared to, I think, you know, the giant, the granddaddy in the industry is Zoetis, I think, out in the States. And I'm not sure exactly what that's on, but it's about 25 times is on sort of on double. So, they might have, but that does sort of drugs for animals and stuff. Now, turning to sort of all things technology, Sondrel, which does basically bespoke chip designs, came out with a pretty good sort of like on track trading update the other day. Do you want to take us through this one? Because, I mean, I know chips has been sort of like a difficult area in 2022, but frankly, designing new chips, particularly for the new technologies, whether that's be IoT, whether that's EV, specific to manufacturers, I mean, that seems to be a pretty good, strong area because everybody needs, you know, sort of better design chips.
Yeah, so as you said, a chip designer for, you know, customers in a variety of sectors, such as the automotive, AI, consumer devices. So say you've got a smartwatch manufacturer and, you know, every couple of years you bring out a refresh of the product, rather than having your own in-house team of chip designers, you'll outsource it to Sondrel. And there is a real focus now on having your chip designers, you know, in Europe. We've been far too reliant on China. And obviously the supply chain issues that have been in existence as well that have really, you know, really affected, especially the automotive sector. The company is forecast to grow very, very sharply indeed. You know, sort of 18 million turnover in 2022 to sort of north of 30 next year. They actually IPO'd towards the end of last year. They raised £20 million for expansion purposes, so it's real expansion capital. And the founder and the CEO is in place as well, and it's one of the big shareholders again. So that's something that we like to invest in, where there's a founder who's, you know, still very heavily involved in the business and has got plenty of skin in the game.
Yeah, that's Graham Curran, is it, I think?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, that's, I mean, I think it's probably suffered. I mean, given the growth is excellent, I think it's probably suffered because it's just turned into sort of profitability, isn't it? Which is once you get that scale, it should sort of like have a lot of drop through.
And it has been profitable in the past, you know, it's self-funded. So it obviously had a difficult time during COVID where revenues, you know, halved, but it's bounced back and obviously is now the listed company. So there's more focus on it.
Yeah. Another one in the tech is Phonix Mobile, which I had never really looked at before, but I think it does sort of like, it's the UK's largest SMS payments firm, also, and it does it for sort of like all kinds of large businesses. So if they run a competition on telly or online, then it allows people to text in some funds or do a tournament or something like that. Do you want to take us through this one? Because I would have thought with the e-payments, this would be a secularly declining industry, but obviously not.
No, so as you say, it's a technology company and it allows its clients. And when we talk about its clients, it'll be really well-known brands like sort of Children in Need and ITV and Comic Relief. And it just allows them to, you know, more easily interact with consumers. And as you say, it does competitions. And I was just watching BT Sport the other day and, you know, it came up during the football match, text this number to donate £10 via your mobile phone bill to the Syria Turkey earthquake appeal. So that's fundamentally, that's what they do. That would have been Phonix's software there. They've got a very blue chip client base, and you know they are now looking to expand into Europe. And you know, this is a technology company that's not expensively valued. It has had a good run, so they're not as cheap as they once were. They're sort of high teens PE, but you know, it's throwing off cash, 3% yield. And we think there's a bit further to go in it as well, and it may see some bid interest as well. You never know.
And has it got growth opportunities outside the UK, given it's got, you know, that moat locally?
No, it is looking to expand into Europe. That's definitely on its on its runway focus. Yeah.
Yeah. Another one, which sort of like IPO'd, I think, or 2 years ago, is Saieta, which basically does e-drive and axial flux electric motor systems for all things electric vehicles like big trucks and trailers out in the States for Conmet, and also for 2 and 3 wheelers out in India. But I mean, it's obviously going through a lot of, you know, sort of growth and raise some money. Is it suffered largely because of the sort of the profit, you know, it's not yet profitable, so it's like many other firms?
Yeah, so as you say, this one floated a couple of years ago and really took off, but has come, share price wise, come sort of crashing back down to earth. As you say, it's, you know, the electric motors for, you know, electric vehicles, and you think sort of mopeds, you know, the emerging markets. You know, there's a huge opportunity to electrify that area. You know, it's It has made progress. It's just signed up with an Indian OEM to supply its motors, which could be worth, you know, as much as sort of 500,000 units over 6 years. Obviously, you mentioned the deal with Conmet as well, which,
yeah,
you know, look to get its products into to trucks. There is a lot going on in this business, and management have actually said that, you know, they're really focusing on the higher margin parts of the business rather than the sort of lower margin, but sort of more where revenue is more readily available. So it has put the revenue of the business back somewhat, which the market has not taken very well at all. But again, if you look at the forecasts, and if they're anything close to right, you know, revenue in 2024 of 30 million, you know, rising to 100 million in 2025, if they get anywhere close to that, then these shares are just the wrong price.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's getting onto these programs, isn't it? It's the OEM programs. Once you do that, then essentially, you know, you've got a truck and a trailer which might be out in the market, as you know, for 10, 15, 20 years. And likewise with sort of like two or three wheelers, they're probably in the market 10, you know, sort of 5 or 10 years at least. So, you know, you get that ongoing sort of like platform type recurring revenue, don't you? So, you know, it's winning those OEM contracts, I guess, is the key.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what they need to do.
Okay.
That is really, really now the focus for them.
Yeah. And another one which was a darling during the lockdowns, which has come a long way, is GB Group, that does sort of all things online identity, sort of verification, location, you know, sorry, identification, and then sort of like location and age verification and all this sort of stuff. And it's obviously long term has done really, really well. And then it bought a business, I think, in the States. The shares are sort of like, come back to sort of £3.50. So, you know, they've sort of retraced quite a lot. Seems to be a, you know, potentially a good turnaround opportunity for all things cyber security related.
Yeah, so they're GB are very much a leader in the sort of digital identity. I mean, we use them at RC Brown when onboarding new clients as part of our sort of money laundering checks. And, you know, they've got a very blue chip client base, you know, the big banks and IBM.
Mm.
And as you say, this share has derated materially, you know, now trading on sort of a P of 20 times or so, which isn't expensive historically. There has been some private equity interest in this business as well, but they actually pulled out. So I think there is possibility of that returning as well if the shares don't improve from these levels. But like many things that, you know, we're seeing and talking about, there are a lot of smaller companies and companies on the AIM market that have been so heavily sold off, and it just feels that there is real sort of latent value in parts of the market.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think, you know, the small cap has really been sort of beaten up, and as long as you can sort of stock pick, then you can do really well. I think looking at it as sort of like a 2 or 3 year view. Now, just moving up the food chain to HSBC, can you just briefly talk about what's sort of like, again, attracted you there, and also just broadly in terms of the banks, because they've recovered quite a lot this year, actually.
Yeah, they've done well, and they performed generally pretty well last year as well
in
difficult market, and obviously helped the FTSE 100s to a positive return. Look, we're constructive on the banking sector. We hold Barclays, we hold Lloyds, we added NatWest last year as well. And HSBC just provides a bit of diversification, really, obviously the Far East and China, you know, compared to obviously our UK banks. It has been selling off some of its non-core operations, so it got out of Canada, and this will help it increase its capital ratios, which is a little bit skinnier than certainly the UK banks. We're broadly positive on the banking sector. We actually think it's got further to go, and it's a sector that, you know, where interest rates are normalising, and, you know, we don't believe there's going to be a really sort of bad recession, which you know, may put you off this area if you did feel that. But the valuations are not expensive. I mean, they're now trading back at sort of book value a lot of
That's right.
Barclays is one that still looks a bit of an outlier and is cheap, but they are back at book value. But their book values are now at least going up, and they spent much of the last 15 years book value sort of diminishing.
Yeah, and I guess HSBC will also benefit from China reopening and Hong Kong, I imagine.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a decent way of playing that part of the market, but in a UK listed company, and the attractions that come with that.
Mm. And then another area that, or another sector that seems to be a beneficiary, if you believe in a sort of like a more benign economic outlook, which has been beaten badly, is sort of all things building products and services. And just pointing to, you know, Enerqua Tech, which I think does sort of like they've got a patented constant flow valve that sort of like helps homeowners and landlords improve the energy efficiency and the water efficiency of things like showers and heating systems and stuff like that. Do you want to take us through this one? Because it seems to have something pretty unique, actually.
Yeah, so this floated back in sort of late 2021. And obviously, market conditions have been pretty difficult since then. But the company's not really put a foot wrong, and it's traded well. As you say, it's sort of the water pressure if you're in, you know, blocks of flats or hotels, and also the installation of heat pumps and air source pumps as well, because that's a major growth driver for this company as well. And you know, it is growing. It's growing its revenues and its profits strongly, and so far it's so good. And I don't think the market is really quite sort of cottoned on to the shares are trading above their IPO price, but not by a huge amount. And certainly think it's a company that's got further to go. It may look to make one or two acquisitions as well.
Yeah, it's got a good balance sheet also, and I think it's on a PE of about 11. So,
yeah,
right. I mean, it looks for a sort of like a pretty patent, you know, decent patented business on that valve side, you know, to be pretty cheap. And another one, or a couple of them, is basically you've got building services company Lords Group Trading and Brickability, which are more sort of like, you know, I think the first one is a builder's merchants, does timber and obviously all building products with Lords. And then you've got more sort of like a distributor of bricks and Brickability. Do you want to take us through these two as well? Because they're trading at ridiculously low levels, largely on macro sentiment, I imagine.
Yeah, as you say, both have been sort of beaten up, but I think are showing some signs of recovery. Lords, you know, more sort of builder than plumbing merchant, it's grown faster than the market. It's very much a consolidator in that area, so no doubt there'll be further acquisitions it'll make. You know, it's derated.
You know, it's trading at less than 10 times, isn't it?
It's trading at less than 10 times. There's a reasonable yield on it. It's cheap. Yeah, so far it's not really put a foot wrong since it listed, you know, two or three years ago. And Brickability, you know, leading sort of brick distributor, but it has obviously evolved into other areas like sort of roofs and timber and tower rails. There is a need for new homes, but even that area, which, you know, may quieten down because of the economic environment. But their update the other day was good, and it showed it's not just about the new homes. There's plenty of existing infrastructure that needs upgrading. And again, the business got a decent track record so far. And this is cheaper than Lords. You know,
it's just over seven times, isn't it?
Seven times. The yield's 4.5, you know, moving to 5%. So I don't think you can really go too far wrong with these types of businesses.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think we would say Brickability's the trading update was actually better than expected, wasn't it? Certainly at the EBITDA. So, I mean, I think it's one of those things, isn't it? It's sort of like investors get very scared about all the noise they hear, but actually, sort of like the at the margin, it seems as though what's happening at the coalface, that building sector, certainly from the house builders, is improving, because I think even MJ Gleeson came out with improving reservations at their sites as well. So it does seem as, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, this whole area seems to be mispriced.
Yeah, it does. And obviously employment is still high as well. So, you know, that's what would worry you if employment was going, you know, unemployment was going through the roof and, you know, people losing their jobs. And of course their habits will change. But whilst people have got employment, there is inflation and people's, you know, purse strings are tight, but, you know, people are seeing pay rises come through, and people, you know, will always want to look to, you know, improve the house that they got, or perhaps move to a new house. You know, that's human nature, and that's not going to stop.
Yeah. Well, that brings us perfectly then onto the actual consumer with the sort of FMCG. We've got two sort of like real stalwarts of the portfolio. We've got Unilever and Diageo. Unilever doing all things sort of like FMCG products, ice cream and detergents and personal products. And then we've got Diageo, which is in, you can celebrate and have some Johnny Walker and a pint of Guinness as well. And again, these ones seem to be pretty resilient and a nice mix on the portfolio.
Yeah, so they're sort of mega caps. You know, we like to have a portfolio that is spread across different market capitalizations, different sectors. And you know, Unilever and Diageo fit into that as sort of mega caps with good global exposure. And Unilever in particular has got good emerging market exposure. Both have got great brands. You know, on Unilever side, sort of Dove and Persil and Magnums. And
you can test those products, certainly on the Magnum side.
Exactly. And, you know, Diageo with the likes of Johnny Walker and Guinness. They, you know, in simple terms, they both provide stability to a portfolio. I mean, Unilever is the one that is cheaper of the two, but its margins aren't as great, you know, and offers a dividend yield of 4%. But both are what I'd call sort of elephants. You know, they're not going to run away. I don't think you're going to make huge returns from either, but they produce you a decent dividend yield and, you know, our earnings enhancing every year, increasing their earnings, then they are reasonable sort of ballast in the portfolio. Neither are expensive either.
Yeah, and it was actually quite interesting. I know it was probably a different world of really cheap money, but Warren Buffett's outfit had a shot at Unilever, didn't it, a few years ago? Then imported back, even though Unilever is a sort of £120 billion business. So you're right, it's a unique asset, which is something that is always going to provide resilience of pricing power in the actual portfolio.
And people like brands as well, and even in a downturn, you know, we're still seeing people are sticking to their brands by and large, and then these two definitely fall into that category.
Yeah, another one with a really strong brand, which is coming up, it was gone through a bit of a sort of like through the ringer, I guess, is Hotel Chocolat, which again was a bit of a lockdown darling, but has actually sort of stumbled and but came out with an encouraging trading update over Christmas. Do you want to tell, what's the latest on this one?
Yeah, so as you say, it's a consumer stock that, you know, got rather beaten up last year when they pulled out of their joint venture in Japan, which really kind of did spook the market because this was seen as more than just a UK play. Interestingly, at their latest update, they're going to have another crack at Japan. They found a new business partner there. There's a new tie-up and they've got 20% in the stake in the JV. And they'll get some royalties from that. It's a lower risk way of going into an overseas market. So we'll see how that develops. Mm. As you say, the trading update in over Christmas was good. They're trading well. They're still selling plenty of their velvetizers.
Yeah, that's it.
Exactly, which you know, are sort of premium products.
Have you tested that one?
I own one, yes. I do.
Okay, what's it like? Good.
Yeah, it's very good. It's very good, yeah. But limit yourself to one a day, I think.
yeah, I can imagine.
So, so that product's gone really well as well. And there is an element of going back to basics with this business. You know, they have realised, you know, they've cut some costs and they've definitely now greater focus on improving their margins. What it is, though, is a really good brand and a recognised brand and a strong brand, and the business has got net cash as well. So, you know, we think there's reasonable scope for some recovery going forward. And, you know, there's good margins on this business. You know, they charge good money for their, you know, for their chocolate.
Yeah. One area with sort of like, you know, branded retailers is sort of inventory control. And have they seen that sell through? Sort of like any inventory, is that, you know, excess inventory? Has that come through the pipe now? Has it been sold through?
Yeah, that seems to have been okay. They seem to have that under control. So that's not a major worry for us. You can always sell off your chocolate. You know, at decent levels, even if there are some lines that haven't shifted quite as well. But they know what they're doing, these guys.
Yeah. Now, a few discounts to my daughters and they'll chomp through that, no problem. Yeah. Then finally, on the consumer side, Supreme, which is a bit of a winner, I think, on the vaping side and continues to be. Again, it's pretty cheap still, sort of less than 11 times. I know it does other lines. Do you want to give us the latest on this one?
Yeah, so it's few different parts to its business. It's got the batteries, which is a real steady Eddie part, the lighting division, the vaping, and then a sort of a small but growing sports nutrition business. So
That's right, yeah.
Its big customers are really the discounters, so the likes of B&M and Poundland. Did have a bit of a wobble last year in its lighting division, where there was just quite a lot of customer destocking, but that seems to have now sorted itself out and passed through. It's the vaping bit which probably gets the market most excited. That is now the largest part of its business, and that continues to trade well. You see people vaping everywhere. There may be some more acquisitions that they make in that area as well. And as you say it time and time again, the stock is cheap. You know, a stock on sort of 10 times. You know, this is never going to be a very, very highly rated business, but you know, 10 times just feels too cheap for us.
Yeah, particularly with that secular trend. I mean, you should say you see so many people who are vaping all over the place. So it seems to be a bit of a craze. Now, one area that did really well last year, and I think it was probably the strongest sector, was energy and oil and stuff. And then I see you've got sort of Shell in the portfolio, which again is another great dividend play and now a sound balance. Do you want to take us through your sort of like latest view on all things sort of like, you know, energy and oil and gas, you know, related?
Yeah, so as you say, the Shell's results were very strong, as were BP, which we also hold. For obvious reasons, the oil and gas prices are so high. You know, profits up, dividends are up. As you say, still a decent dividend yielder on this. And Shell also announced a bounce back, a buyback as well.
Yeah.
Share buyback. And they're going to look to continue to invest in the transition to cleaner energy, because there is a lot of focus on that and a lot of political pressure as well, and a need to do that. And you know, we just think it's important to have exposure to, you know, to this part of the market. You know, many didn't last year, and that really would have been unhelpful for their performance.
Yeah, I didn't. So it was for me as well.
Yeah, and we just think, you know, these are big, well diversified, you know, obviously
FTSE
100 companies that were paying us to wait in any event, and perhaps hadn't performed all that well, but they have really taken off, and we continue to want to hold these businesses as well.
I would have thought I did see the IEA forecast for sort of like the balance between supply and demand at the global level, and it reckons with China coming back in the second half, then you're going to see, and increased aviation travel, you're going to see demand exceeding supply. So that should put a big flaw. The only wobble, and you can never tell, is basically if there is ever a ceasefire in Ukraine and Russia and they resolve that. But difficult to call you. I mean, that's something you can't control, isn't it, really?
That's a binary event. And also, even if there was a ceasefire tomorrow, it's going to take some time before, you know, Russian gas and oil comes back onto the market. I mean, you know, that could be a decade away. So, I wouldn't be too much worried about it. It'd obviously be a good thing for
your other portfolio stocks,
you know, as well as markets. But yeah, unfortunately, it does look like that situation is rumbling on, sadly.
Yeah. No, and I think you raised a really good point, actually, in terms of diversification, because it's something you can't control. It's a binary event. And if it does happen, either there's a Ukraine-Russia ceasefire, then the rest of your portfolio will do pretty well. So it's sort of like you're hedging your bets for something that it's a good policy, basically. You win both ways.
And the demand will still be there, as I say. Yeah. Russian oil and gas isn't coming back on stream anytime soon. So
yeah, you're right. And then another one which you've done really well is Ashtead Technology in this area. Now, it's not a straight oil and gas. It does sort of like, you know, services, but, and I think over a third of the business is offshore wind as well, but marine sort of like services, robots and stuff like that are largely based up in the North Sea. You'll take us through this one, because again, it's knocking the ball out of the park. It's sort of like, seems to be a run the winner type stock.
Yeah, so it's a sort of rental equipment and solutions provider focused on offshore energy, say not just oil and gas, but obviously growing renewable and offshore wind part of the business. We actually acquired the shares earlier this year, so there's quite a new holding for us. There was a sell down by private equity and management at a discount.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Price. So we participated in that. And as you say, it's well positioned to benefit. You know, there's a greater focus now on energy diversification and security. in this country and in Europe as a whole. And this business is well positioned. You know, it's forecast to grow its revenues, by double digit amounts. And it's not, again, it's not an expensive business, trading on what, 13 times or so.
Yeah.
We think there's further to go in this one.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And I've spoken to a few other astute fund managers, and they're all sort of like, wanting to get involved in this one. Now, just finally then, turning to all things commodity, Rio Tinto, which again, large cap global sort of miner, does iron ore and copper and some of the battery metals and stuff like that. Do you want to take us through this? Just take us through this, the investment case on this one.
Yeah, so Rio's Tinto, big diversified miner, big FTSE 100 company. Its biggest commodity is iron ore. Mm. For us, it's a good way of just playing sort of global economic growth and China. And there is a need for commodities to be part of this transition to cleaner energy. These businesses are throwing off cash. The debt is low. Compared to when the start of the sort of financial crisis, where miners had been on a expansion sort of binge, if you like, and had really high debt levels. That's not an issue anymore. And these things are, they're throwing off cash. There's big dividends being paid as well. And again, a bit like with sort of oil and, energy, we think it's important to have exposure to this area. And again, being a UK investor, it's not difficult to get exposure. You've obviously got BHP, which is listed. We've got Rio Tinto. We also hold Anglo American as well. And for us, these are good, well-diversified businesses. We don't really see the need to go sort of delving around in the sort of small cap area for this part of the market so much, because they tend to be much higher risk.
Yeah, of course.
So yeah, we're very happy to own these, which have done well, and obviously continue to hold them.
Mm. How do you value a sort of a large cap miner? You look at through cycle earnings and then put a sort of like a multiple on top. I mean, how do you go about doing it?
Yeah, well, you say it's difficult because obviously the E.
Yes, it fluctuates.
Fluctuates rather. And that's why these businesses will never be highly valued. You're never going to sort of put a 15 times P on these business. But as you say, if you get an earnings level, you might perhaps discount that by 20 or 30%, because obviously commodity prices can fall at quite short notice by a considerable amount. And as long as these businesses are still making good margins from the cost of obviously extracting them, then you can at least take a view and then you can take a view as to how sustainable that dividend is. And at the moment, they're making so much money, you're getting paid very significant special dividends, which I accept won't last forever. But even if they just pay their ordinary dividend, you're still getting a very nice dividend. And these are big global businesses as well that have got the benefits of scale.
Yeah, and they've got rock solid balance sheets as well. I was just looking at Rio's, and it's got sort of like a $2.5 billion net debt compared to an EBITDA of 10 times that. So it's got practically zero, has it really?
Yeah.
Okay, brilliant. Well, thanks very much, Oliver. Now, if anybody wants to invest in RC's funds, how best to do that?
Yeah, so our, it's called the IFSL RC Brown UK Primary Opportunities Fund. It's available on pretty much all platforms. Our particular interest and focus is on companies at the stage they're raising money. So 2022 was a quieter year, just with economic conditions and market nervousness, but we are seeing that come back this year as well, and we think it'll be quite an active year as well. We certainly added a couple of new positions just last week. Diversified Energy, which is a US listed gas company, FTSE 250 listed, and 3i Infrastructure as well. So we're available. We're out there to be found on most of the platforms.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, look forward in talking through those in about 6 months' time. So best of luck, and thanks very much.
Lovely. Thanks very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.